Hello and welcome to Behind the Mic Radio. I am your host, Dawn Mack, and so very glad to be here with you today. I hope it's been a wonderful day for you. Here in North Carolina, it's been a beautiful, sunny, gorgeous day, about mid-60s. I think spring has finally decided to arrive, and I know a lot of people out there are very, very happy to see winter say goodbye. We are excited today because our guest, it's just a real treat and a rare, rare opportunity to have him with us. He is best known for his portrayal of Danny Santos on the CBS daytime drama Guiding Light. You may also remember him for his role of Casey Bowman on Loving. He was nominated for Daytime Emmy for Outstanding Supporting Actor in a Drama Series for Guiding Light. He has also held roles on Damages and Law & Order, and most recently, Blue Bloods. He is currently starring as Frank Sinatra in William Mastrosimone's Ride the Tiger, directed by Gordon Edelstein, which runs through April 21st at the Long Wharf Theater in New Haven, Connecticut. And our guest is none other than Paul Anthony Stewart.
Hello.
Hello. Is this Paul?
Well, hi there. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here and talk with you. I just finished a matinee and ran back to my apartment here in New Haven, and the timing couldn't have been more perfect.
Perfect. I know that you're in kind of in between shows, and so we are very, very appreciative of your time today being with us, as I know you have had a very, very busy schedule of late. So thank you so very much.
Sure, I'm happy to be here.
Well, I first of all, it's been a long time, and I want to, you know, talk to you about what you have been up to, because I, along with all the Guiding Light fans out there, we would love to know, what have you been up to since Guiding Light?
Well, a lot, actually. I've been getting my feet back in the theater, which is where I started my career, and I really didn't get much opportunity when I was working on Guiding Light to do much theater, and it really is my favorite thing to do. And so I took the opportunity when Guiding Light ended to just jump back into the theater world, and I've been doing all kinds of great projects over the last, 5-7 years, I guess it's been. I can't believe it's been that long.
It's been too long, actually, and I can tell you that being a Guiding Light fan, Guiding Light was my all-time favorite daytime drama of all the soaps out there.
So it was
really a shock for me when I learned, like everybody else that was a fan of the show, you know, that it was ending. I mean, daytime was just one of those things. I mean, I grew up with it. It was generational.
Yeah.
You just never in your wildest imagination thought that daytime dramas would go off the air. It was just not heard of. And so it was just, you know, it was like as things kind of unfolded with that, it was just like really, it just, even to this day, it seems very surreal almost that it's not on the air anymore. And so, but
it's very sad. Many jobs were lost, and then all of you viewers lost all those favorite characters who many of you grew up with. And you know, one of the greatest joys of working on Guiding Light was meeting the viewers over the years and hearing the different stories of how they came to start watching Guiding Light, what made them tune into Guiding Light, and so many times I met people who started watching Guiding Light because their grandmother watched Guiding Light, and it was a real family tradition handed down from grandmothers to daughters, and when I was working, when I started on Guiding Light, the internet really started taking off, and then we had the emergence of chat rooms where fans and viewers could meet each other through cyberspace and arrange gatherings, and friendships formed across the world, which was really an amazing thing to witness when it began, and then as it grew and mushroomed into something really pretty spectacular.
Oh, it most definitely. And actually, you know, how I became familiar with you was when you landed in Springfield, you know, on Guiding Light in the role of Danny Santos. And talk a little bit about how that came about for you, because I can tell you, the whole storyline of Danny and Michelle was one of my all-time favorites, not only on Guiding Light, but just in Soap Couple, in the history of Soap Couples. So it was a brilliant thing that the writers, you know, introduced into the series. And so how did that happen for you?
That's a very good question. I was actually living in Los Angeles at the time, and I had flown into New York for a screening of a little independent movie that I had made, and I got a call to come in and read with Paul Rausch, to meet with him for this character who I was told at the time would really just be a short-term, maybe 6 months, recurring role. And I came in, and at first I met with Glenn Daniels, the casting director, and talked with him about it, and then I met with Paul and Joy, who at that time was Joy Lenz, and now she's Bethany Galliotti.
Yes.
And I just know her as Joy Lenz. I'll always know her as Joy Lenz. And met with her, and we read together, and the show, the role started, and I guess people took to it in the way that you did. And very quickly, I would say within about 3 weeks, I was offered a contract to stay. And I too was very taken with the storyline, and I found something very exciting and interesting about the character. Danny was a character who really intrigued me because he was sort of an anti-hero. We wanted to root for him, but yet we also kind of hated him. and found him so, you know, what I love is that people love to hate him and hated to love him. And I found that really intriguing as an actor to play that sort of character. And it was also sort of a classic Beauty and the Beast storyline. And I just loved working with Joy. And I said, sure thing, sign me up. I'll stick around for a while. And then 7 years later, it's amazing. It doesn't even feel like it's been that long since it ended, frankly. It really feels sometimes just like yesterday.
Oh, I know. I know that too well. And that was, you know, I was probably one of the few listeners, or viewers rather, that I can tell you never hated the role of Danny. I always liked him because, for me, it was always difficult to associate Danny with the mob because he was not your typical mobster based on preconceived notions and stereotypes. So, you know, for me personally, it was hard for me to dislike him because it seemed like in the face of adversity, he was still trying, you know, underneath all of that, you know, persona, he was still the good guy. You know, you could see the good in him. And so, what are some of the things that you perceived about his character? Because he, you know, you played him so well and made him your own. And were there any aspects of yourself that you incorporated into his character, or did you just kind of create it as you went along?
Well, a little bit of both. I mean, I found what I did find it so interesting about that character was the challenge of not making him a stereotype. And I really do look for these challenges in my work and in how to make a character that could potentially be stereotypical more human and truthful and contradictory, and because people are contradictory and we are many things on many different days and depending on who we're with. And I find that fascinating. And and then they just wrote, and this is the writers, and this was Paul Rausch, who sadly we lost a few months ago, one of the greatest executive producers I've ever worked with. And this was really his brainchild. He saw potential for a really interesting story that, you know, granted was going to steer Springfield in a slightly different direction for a few years. But Paul really felt strongly about this story. And I guess and then add to that, viewers, I guess, responded to the chemistry that Joy and I had, which is something very undefinable and mysterious, and you can't make it happen. It just happens, and Joy and I just were fortunate enough to really love working with each other and love each other as people, and I guess, you know, that translated on screen, and people responded, and so Paul Rausch took that as further motivation to delve into the storyline, so that's when he brought on additional characters. He brought on Carmen and Pilar and sort of really built up and the Santos family to sort of create more dimension for this love story. That is basically how it came about.
Well, and the key word, magic word here is chemistry, because it was very apparent that off screen you two had a deep, mad respect for one another as actors, and it carried through on screen, and it really made that story, you know, incredibly huge for Guiding Light. And it also, the other beauty of it was the fact that it allowed for the writers to introduce some new characters. You had Tony and Mara's storyline that kind of came out of that down the road. And
right.
And it was just so incredible how, you know, that was why I love Guiding Light, because it was, you know, you never had a dull moment. And there were always, even when there were new characters, you know, introduced to the show, they were always well received. And it's kind of a little bit different today. I see it, you know, a lot in some of the daytime shows. It's not quite like that. But that was the beauty of, you know, what was going on, you know, to make the show what it was. And so that was one of the biggest reasons why I hated to see it end, because it was always good to watch every day. You know,
yes.
You just never thought that Springfield would close down, you know, so to speak.
No, I don't think anybody really did. Yeah, that was a sad day.
Well, you know, was there there were several storylines that kind of evolved out of your character. Was there a particular favorite storyline that pertained to Danny on Guiding Light?
Oh, boy. That's a good question. I got to do so many incredible things in my time there. It was really kind of staggering. One day I was flying a plane, and the next day I was steering a boat, or I was being, it really ran the gamut. I was so fortunate to be working with such talented actors. Everyone on that show was so talented, and I was so fortunate that Paul hired Sandra Santiago to play my mother, and we had so many great scenes between me and Danny, Michelle, and Carmen, and then Jordy came on. He was such a great guy and wonderful actor. And God, to actually pick a storyline, that's a tough one. I would say, I really enjoyed going. There was a period when Danny went undercover to bring down the mob, and that was a fun challenge to play. But I think I really enjoyed that, but I think what really I enjoyed the most, and probably what the fans really enjoyed the most, I'm guessing, and what made that storyline really kick into gear, was Danny and Michelle just always fighting for their love, and whether that meant fighting every family member that each of them had, but just fighting to be together. The passion that the writers outline for us between these two characters was always, basically, when you're acting, what you pray for is a really good obstacle, something to overcome. And the writers were really great at continually giving us something to fight against. And that made it interesting for us. So I don't know if I could even pick. It's funny because I think of the entire 7 years as a storyline, as an arc, you know, for these characters. So to pick out some isolated moments. I enjoyed Faking My Death. That was fun. I mean, how often do you get to do that?
Yeah, really? And live to tell about it.
Yeah, and of course it's always fun when you get to do some of the crazy pyrotechnical stuff when you're blowing up things or getting into gunfights. And I mean, that's, you know, that's the whole magic of make-believe. And it's like, you know, playing cowboys and Indians when you're a kid. It's so, I mean, I love what I do, and I every day I feel so blessed and grateful to be able to do what I do, which is use my imagination and enter the skin of another character and play. I mean, it's really, I love what I do.
Well, and you do it so very well, I must tell you. You know, that was one of the things I loved about your character, but you were just a brilliant actor, and you know, Guiding Light was just laced with brilliance in terms of acting and the perfection there among the cast, and being able to just deliver a story and make it so believable. I mean, you just get, as a viewer, you just get drawn into it as if it's part of your life, you know, because it just came across that way time and time again. Now, you know, with the loss of some daytime dramas like Guiding Light and now the forthcoming rebirth of All My Children and One Life to Live, if Guiding Light were to ever be resurrected, would you consider returning to the show if asked?
Well, yeah, I've always made it a policy in my life to never say never, because you never, I never know where I'm going to be next week. I mean, I know that, you know, God willing, I'll be here in New Haven doing this play for 2 more weeks. But then beyond that, I mean, I know I've got a couple other jobs lined up this year. But I never know how I'll feel about anything down the line. So it would depend on. Sure, I would never rule anything out. You know, it would depend on so many things. What sort of story we're talking about? Who I could be working with? Because for me, ultimately, it's about telling great story. And if there's a great story to be told and an interesting character with which to tell the story, I'm there. So.
Yeah. Well, and let's turn now to your current project, because I believe this is, from what I've read, it's a great story. You are starring as Frank Sinatra in the William Nastro Simone's Ride the Tiger, which is directed by Gordon Edelstein, and it runs through April 21st at the, I believe, the Long Wharf Theater, am I correct?
That's right, the Long Wharf Theater in New Haven, Connecticut.
Well, talk a little bit about the play, if you can, without giving anything away, to kind of give us a little bit of an idea of what it is.
It's such a thrilling play, and talk about a great story with great characters. And this play is sort of a, and I'm going to steal this description from Christina Bennett Lind, who was on All My Children and who's in the play with me, who calls it sort of a Mad Men meets the West Wing. And this play is one of the conspiracy theories surrounding JFK's rise to the presidency and his subsequent assassination. And it all came about when Bill, our playwright, William Nastro Simone, was writing a miniseries about Frank Sinatra in the late 90s. And he was fortunate enough to spend a year with Frank privately in his home, interviewing him about his life. And during the process of this year-long interview, Frank told Bill that the mafia was responsible for the assassination of JFK, and then proceeded to explain to him exactly how that came about, his involvement in it. And from that story, our playwright, Bill, wrote this play. Now, he takes a lot of artistic license, but what he does rely upon are the basic facts of the story, as Frank told him. And this is a 5-character play and involves 5 people who really lived: Frank Sinatra, JFK, his father, Joe Kennedy, Sam Giancana, who was the head of a Chicago mafia outfit, and a woman named Judith Exner, who was originally Frank's girlfriend. Frank introduced her to JFK. She became JFK's mistress. But then she also became Sam Giancana's mistress, the head of the mob. And it was about the triangle created, and the things, and what's so wonderful about this play is it's seductive, and it's a sort of a political thriller. It's incredibly funny until it's not, as our director Gordon likes to say. And by the end of the play, I think anyone who may have felt doubtful about the plausibility of this particular story may reconsider how they think about it, because the way it's laid out in this play makes the theory seem very credible. And it's a wonderful cast, and it's a beautiful play, and it's funny and moving, and I'm just and here we are again. I'm have this incredible opportunity to play someone so iconic, and that is what really made me want to take this job, is the challenge of I've never had the opportunity to play an actual celebrity, someone who's so iconic in our consciousness, and it's a huge challenge, and it scared the hell out of me, and it still does every time I go on. I'm like, I don't know if they're gonna buy this, but I love the challenge, and that's why I took it on, and that's how I live my life, is taking on jobs that challenge me and help me grow as an actor. And I'm having just a great time, and the audiences seem to really be responding well to this show, and it's selling very well, and the theater's very happy, and we're just having a blast.
Well, I wish I were in and around New Haven, because I would certainly try to get out to see this play before it ended, because it sounds just fascinating, and you know, and just being able to see that story be told, not only, you know, be told, but be told on the stage in such a huge way. And when I read that you were portraying Frank Sinatra, I was like, wow, that's so huge on so many levels. So talk a little bit about playing Frank, because what kind of preparation went into this role? Did you have to study, you know, his career, his music, a little bit of it all, in order to kind of get the character down and how you wanted to play him?
Well, yeah, there were many. I had sort of approached this from many different angles, actually. And when I was originally asked about being in this play, my big concern was that I wanted to make sure they were not looking for an impersonator, because that's not what I do. I had no interest in being an impersonator. And they assured me, the director, that Gordon assured me that that was not at all what they were looking for. They wanted the essences of who these people are, but then to take the role from there. And, you know, because, and so, everyone has a concept and an idea of who Frank is, but it's entirely from his movies and from his music. And I approached this role by reading as much as I could about him, about his private life, about his personal life. And from talking, I had the incredible fortune, good fortune, of having Bill, our playwright, here working on the play with us. And Bill spent a year with Frank, and I could speak with Bill about what Frank was really like in private, because this play takes place in private. All the scenes that happen between the characters are two-person scenes in a room where no one else is listening. So we're really seeing the private lives of these people, not the public personas. So I knew that, you know, this was going to be a tricky ride to go on, so to speak, because I think people coming in are going to, I don't know what sort of expectations they may have about Frank. They may be hoping to see the Frank Sinatra that they knew from Period of Eternity, or from Ocean's 11, or Guys and Dolls, or, you know, or whatever, or from The Favorite, or from just from the singing New York, New York. I mean, who knows? So I watched a lot of his movies as well. I watched what I found most beautiful was his TV show that he had in the late 50s, because that was closest to when the time period of the play occurs. Studied his mannerisms, the way he talks. I got to do work with a great accent coach to sort of work on a Hoboken accent. But for me, I really wanted to, the challenge for me also is to make Frank a real person, the one that you know, very few people actually saw. So, and I also went into that knowing they're probably going to, you know, there's probably going to be a lot of people who are going to be out for blood. You know, when you try to impersonate somebody so iconic, everyone's going to have an opinion about it. And I had to really step away from worrying about that and do my work and do the tell the story. And I feel like I and the other actors who are similarly stepping into some iconic roles, and I think that we're all successfully telling the story. So what I hope is that when people come to see it, you know, even if in the first minute or two they're like, "Well, that's not Frank," or "That doesn't sound like him," because I mean, I'm not trying to go for sounding like a dead ringer Frank. That doesn't interest me.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to have. So I'm hoping that, you know, within a few minutes people can relax and go that there's enough aspects of Frank that people can relax and accept, okay, this is a play, he's Frank Sinatra, and then just go with the story. I feel like that we're doing that, so I hope so. But every day I just sort of try to honor Frank and put his best foot forward.
Well, I haven't seen you in this play, but I can tell you, I'm sure that your acting is just phenomenal. And after watching you for so long on Guiding Light, and I know that you're doing the role very good justice, and, you know, and Frank would probably be very proud of you as well. So, you know, because I think if you were trying to put it out there to make him, you know, to try and be an exact replica almost of him, of what people perceive, it would maybe take away from the story itself, and the whole concept is to get to grasp what the story is
right.
about.
I don't want people to, exactly, very well put, I don't want people to marvel at the Frank Sinatra impersonator as much
mm-hmm.
as just accept that that's Frank and follow the story.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted the story to lead before the, so, I mean, I feel, you know, I feel confident. I mean, Bill, who spent a year with Frank, gave me the nicest compliment not so long ago, said he wished that Frank could see me do this because he thinks he would really be, you know, impressed and flattered. So from someone who actually spent a year with him in private to say that is encouraging in the sense, at least, you know, I'm not wildly off track.
That's very good. And I'm sure he would be. You know, I second that. Having seen you on GL, it's just, I don't see how you couldn't be. So I think they definitely picked the right person for the role. I just wish that it were, you know, a little more down south, you know, like it would start, the play would start traveling around so that, you know, we could catch you a little bit closer. I don't think it's in my immediate plans to travel to Connecticut, but I would love to if I had the opportunity.
Well, fingers crossed. Hopefully, if this show is received well, maybe it will have more life, maybe we will be in a theater near you. We'll see.
Well, that would be awesome. That would be awesome. Well, before we wrap, I'd like to take a call if I may. Do you have time to take a call?
Of course.
Okay. All right. You're going to be speaking with hello, Pam.
Good evening, Don and Paul. How are you both?
Hi.
Hi, Pam.
Hi. My question for you is, what haven't you done yet that you would like to do?
Well, that's a really good question. You know, it's funny. I've never been one to say, I know, like a lot of actors I know who think, I want to play Hamlet one day, or I've got to play this role. And I don't have specific goals like that, like that there are specific characters I would like to play. What I kind of do for myself, I've noticed with myself is as I've spent a few more years in this life and in this career, is that I make choices for myself. When I finished on Guiding Light, for example, I said to myself, I really want to get back into the theater. And I've been playing young ingenue characters, and now I really want to start trying to play men. So that's a goal for myself. And I did that for a little while. And then last year, I said, you know, I'm really going to start playing some more character roles, and made that a goal. And that's how
mm-hmm.
Frank Sinatra came about, as well as some of these other projects that are happening later in the year. So so I don't know if that's helpful in any way.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, good. I mean, I just really like to always be challenged, and that can come in many forms. For me, it's about an interesting character, and as long as they're interesting and the story's good, that's good for me.
Do you keep in contact with a lot of...
I'm sorry, what?
I was going to ask you, do you keep in contact with any of the actors, actresses from Guiding Light?
Sure. I see Sandra pretty frequently. I talk to Nancy St. Alban pretty frequently. Who else do I see? I mean, they've become very good friends of mine. Joy, I have not seen as much because her life is on the other side of the country, but we've stayed in touch. I run into, New York City, for being such a big city, it's amazing how you can run into your fellow actors anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Kim Zimmer came to see a show that I did last year. I got to see her, and it's a small business,
yeah.
Which is nice and comforting. You never really feel like you're saying goodbye to anyone.
I miss Guiding Light so much. I miss it so much, the show, and all you actors and actresses.
Thank you so much. Well, thank you for your viewership over the years.
Thank you. And I'll let you go in case you have any other phone calls. Thank you, Don.
Thank you,
Pam. Appreciate you calling.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Paul, we have one more, and actually this is an international call that has Skyped in. Their name is Rowena, and they're calling from Malaysia.
Okay.
And today her mother is Melinda, and today is her mother's birthday, and she wanted to know if you could give a shout-out to her mom.
Of course.
Rowena?
Hello,
Rowena.
Hi, Paul.
Hi.
Yeah, I'm here. It's good to speak to you.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well. It's 6:30 a.m. here, so we're quite dedicated fans. I saw you.
I know,
but it's all worth it. I saw you in Landing a couple of months ago, and I thought, almost a year ago, and I thought you were really good. So I've always liked your stage work. Yeah, it's my mother's birthday today, and I thought it'd be great if you could just, wish her for me.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear. What's her name?
Maslinda.
Maslinda. Happy birthday to you.
Oh, that's lovely.
There you go.
Thank you. And I was wondering, Paul, what has been your most challenging role to date?
I think, I think, frankly, actually, it's Frank. Frank is really challenging. It's very scary stepping into the shoes of someone so iconic and famous, who everyone has an opinion about. It's very challenging, but I'm having a great time.
That's great.
Doing it.
As long as you're having fun.
I'm having a blast. I really am. Ring a ding ding, as Frank would say.
That's fantastic. Anyway, good luck, Paul, and I hope to see you someday
soon.
Take care.
Thank you very much. Thank you. You too.
Bye bye.
Thank you so much. Goodbye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, wow. You just never know who's going to be listening. They Skyped in all the way from Malaysia. So you have
That's
fans
incredible.
Around the world. Around the world. That is just amazing.
Amazing.
Well, I tell you, I have thoroughly enjoyed speaking with you today and catching up. And I know all the GL fans who are listening are just thrilled that you were able to do this interview, because we have all missed seeing you on television. We've all missed, knowing what's going on with you. And it's so nice to finally catch up and to speak with you today.
Thank you. Well, it was a pleasure to be here and to speak with you as well. And we'll do it again.
Oh, definitely. Please do. And we definitely keep in touch. Thank you, and best of luck to you as the play continues through the 21st of April.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Best to you, too,
right.
as well. Take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, folks, there you have it. Paul Anthony Stewart is our special guest today, and I must tell you that That was a real treat for me, being a Guiding Light viewer all those years and following that storyline as it unfolded from start to finish. And he's just a phenomenal actor, but he's an even more phenomenal human being. And so very honored to have him with us, because it's a very rare thing that, you know, I did a lot of research before this interview. I found very little evidence of a lot of interviews that he has done, really over his career, but especially since leaving Guiding Light. And so this is a rare opportunity, and so very, just feel so blessed and fortunate to have him with us today. And wow, you know, a caller all the way from Malaysia. I mean, it's amazing, you know, how far-reaching the soaps are, especially, you know, when you have a soap like Guiding Light, who, you know, had the longest running record in television as far as longevity of a show, and to just, you know, have fans that are worldwide, even to this day, that still follow and keep up with the former actors of the show. That is just incredible. Just a great track record. It just goes to show, you know, what kind of, you know, impression that all of these people made on all of us, fans of the show. So it's been a great day, and I hope that you enjoyed that as much as I did. I could have talked to him another hour or so, but he actually was in between performances of the show. And if anyone wants to catch his performance, he is performing in this play. The play is called Ride the Tiger, and it runs from now until April 21st. It's being held. Hang on, I can tell you again. It's being held at the Long Wharf Theater in New Haven, Connecticut. So if you're in the Connecticut area between now and the 21st of April, you know, stop in and catch it. It sounds just like a fascinating play. And, you know, I'm not kidding. If I were closer, I would definitely make a point to go see it, because it really, you know, not just to see him performing it, but the story itself just sounds really intriguing. And there's obviously a side of Frank Sinatra and, you know, the other characters in the play that were kind of behind the scenes that, you know, the world didn't know about. So what a very, very unique way and brilliant way to bring this to the light, so to speak. So if you get a chance, check him out there. You can also follow him on Twitter. He's at Paul Anthony Stew, S-T-E-W, and I'm sure he'd love to hear from you. And also, he has a Facebook page at Paul Anthony Stewart. And so, you know, just check him out, and you can stay in touch with him that way. He does not have a website that I've found, so probably the best way to stay up with him is on Twitter, because I do see him on social media quite a bit. So now, coming up tomorrow, for those of you who were here last week and maybe knew this didn't happen, we were scheduled to have Leslie Kay with us last week, and she currently portrays Felicia Forrester on the CBS daytime drama, The Bold and Beautiful. And we had a time issue. The time she was supposed to call in, which was East Coast time, she thought she was supposed to call in West Coast time at that time. So we just had a mix-up on the time, but she graciously agreed to reschedule, and in such a hurry. She's actually going to be here tomorrow, 7 p.m. Eastern, and we will be chatting about her career. And as you know, she originally started her career in daytime on As the World Turns as Molly Conlon. So it's going to be interesting. She's been one of my favorites for a long time. I always enjoy watching her perform. Just a great actress, and she's done a lot of other things too outside of daytime. So it'll be interesting speaking with her. And if any of you love her and want to speak with her, you know, don't be shy. Call in. They love talking with you. So, and our number to speak to any of these guests is 347-945-6965. And also coming up on Monday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, we have another Bold and Beautiful guest with us. Jennifer Brees, who currently plays the role of Donna Logan Forrester, will be our special guest, and that's at 7 p.m. Eastern. So we've got a lot of great guests coming, and so just, you know, continue to follow us on Twitter and stay up to date. You can also check our website at any time, behindthemicradio.com, and it'll keep you constantly updated with all the latest news and information of the things going on with our show here. So, without further ado, I want to say thank you so very much to our special guest again, Paul Anthony Stewart, for being our guest today and joining us. And also to all the listeners out there, thank you for being here and tuning in. And if you're brand new to our show, thank you. Welcome aboard. We hope that you will be back again. And so with that, I will say have a great night. Enjoy your weekend. And we'll be right back here again real soon. Take care, all. Good night.
Thanks for listening to tonight's show. You can connect to Behind the Mic Radio on Twitter at BT Mic Radio and on Facebook at Behind the Mic Radio. Check out our website at BehindTheMicRadio.com. Also, follow us right here on Blog Talk Radio where you can stay up to date on all upcoming shows. Every episode is available for immediate download upon the conclusion of each broadcast and, as always, on iTunes. Thank you for joining us. Tonight's show has been brought to you by One Taste of Main Street Cake Shop, baked from scratch, custom-made cakes and cupcakes, and you'll be hooked. Every cake is made to order with only the finest and freshest ingredients. This is no ordinary bakery. Cakes are never pre-made. Main Street Cake Shop is in demand, having provided cakes and cupcakes for numerous prestigious events, bridal fairs, and venues. Owned and operated by April Murray, she has garnered many awards for not only her exquisite cake designs, but also for their incredible taste. If you're looking for a cake for any occasion, or cupcakes in a variety of flavors, then Main Street Cake Shop is the place. Visit them on the web at mainstreetcakeshop.com.